a world of pain.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 14, Guerrilla Filmmaking. Whoa, put too much mustard on that one.
Yeah, you
and
did.
And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm just going to blame the enchilada. I just have...
Oh my God, Che Guevara is here. Hello, it's not Sarah, it's Adam. Hi, Adam Grossworth.
Hello. Enchiladas are your excuse for everything, Dave.
Dave liked that one. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's happening in the Again With This Club. This Friday, March 20th, it's going to be Again With This 280. Let's read about Jenny Garth in the March 1992 issue of YM. Dave was sitting in for Sarah on this one. Spoiler, we've already recorded it. Since he is a co-host on our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy, he was very interested in all the ways that a typical teen girl magazine of the 90s differs from Sassy. So a lot of learnings were had in the process of reading all about Jenny. So
I'm excited to listen.
It was pretty fun. So again, with this podcast.com/club, any level of support gets you that episode. So, you know, get in there. It helps us make the main podcast, helps us fulfill our goals with our ongoing membership campaign. Again, with this podcast.com/club. If you forget, it's in the show notes. All right, let's start with our B plot. Turns out Jack's frat's not going to win any GLAAD awards. Everyone is having fun in the living room of the frat house, including, I assume, someone's dad or insurance agent. There are a couple of guys in this group scene who look real old, and you can see them in the visual aids.
Mm-hmm. Including Eric, one of the frat guys.
True. Then Jack mopes in and the vibe shifts. Polar Bear, remember him, announces a kegger at a sorority, which is crazy because I thought I learned from a documentary called Neighbors 2. That sororities are prohibited from throwing parties with beer, but whatever.
But fun fact that I just remembered about Massachusetts, at least at the time, sorority houses had to be super small because I forget the number, but a house with a certain number of women in it was automatically classified as a brothel.
Look at that. Wow.
So I don't know what kind of kegger the sorority's throwing with their seven-person house, but I don't know if this is still true, but it definitely was in the late 90s.
Wow. So. I kind of love that. That's great.
Yeah.
So that's everyone's cue to leave except for Jack and Eric, the latter hanging back to say the guys are trying to make it up to Jack by announcing opportunities for them all to hit on girls together. I'm not sure Eric understands the main part of being gay, but Jack knows they want to make up, but he can't stop thinking about how they all bailed on him that night at the bar. Eric says Jack stepped over the line, which news to me, but there are lines in frats. And yeah, that too. Jack feels like the moment he could have gracefully apologized his past, and now he feels like an idiot. Eric jokes that Jack is an idiot, and Jack takes it in the spirit in which it was meant, which is a joke. When we see them next, Jack's looking through his mini-fridge as Eric loiters in the doorway, having not gone with the rest of the guys to hit on the women's gymnastics team because he had work to start putting off, Jack agreeing that procrastination is the only skill they all learn in college. When Jack gets a beer out, Eric wonders if it isn't too early, but Jack's not drinking alone, tossing Eric one and inviting him for a rematch at Madden 2002, and thank God we don't have to watch. When we join them again, they've taken a break from the game. Eric is getting introspective. Clip two.
All my dudes, they go to these parties every night looking for their next girlfriend and for what? Oh, so they can have some chick who's going to bitch and moan at them in the morning, you know, make them watch Notting Hill over and over again? No, forget that. They keep their cake.
This is a particular kind of misogyny where it comes all the way around to, don't you think having a girlfriend is kind of gay, which is like,
well,
you know, after admitting that he likes Notting Hill, Jack lies back down on the floor and Eric lies down next to him asking after a beat. Clip three.
Dude. Yeah. What was it like when you realized you were gay?
Well, it wasn't like that, you know? It wasn't like I woke up one morning from an especially nasty dream about Robert Downey Jr. and I said to myself, hey, I must be gay.
Well, what was it like?
Well, you know, So many people just, they spend so much of their lives just locked up in this cage inside themselves. And they never even know that they have the key all along. Yeah, that's how it was for me. I can't tell you when I first realized it. At some level, I think I've always known it. Probably just like you've always known you're straight. It wasn't about realizing that I was gay. It's about realizing that it was all right.
Okay, Robert Downey Jr. as a crush object in 2002 is so random. This is like when weird. He was on Ally McBeal. Like, seriously. But other than that, Adam, how are they doing so far?
I mean, I've never been in this particular situation, but mm-hmm. It feels pretty real and pretty well written and well acted. I have to give it to them. Mm-hmm. It's and like when Eric first comes into the room, like he's not flirty.
Totally. Yeah.
They're doing surprisingly nice work, I think. And I think I buy this from both of them, particularly Jack not quite understanding what's happening yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Eric says Jack's an amazing guy. And when Jack sort of shakes that off, Eric slowly props himself up on one elbow, kind of leaning over Jack, who's still lying on the floor. And clip four.
You're the kind of guy that I want to be.
You want to watch some more TV? I think though the world's most horrifying bungee accident is on.
Okay, I'm listening. Jack does look very alarmed by where this is suddenly going that he was not expecting.
And yeah, like, right, either he's not interested or mm-hmm. he is afraid of fallout or he's like, it's not what I think. I'm uncomfortable, but you can't be gay. You're a frat guy. Like, there's yeah. any of those readings is plausible and believable. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that they're doing nice work here.
Yeah, I agree. So sometime later, Jack is, I assume, passed out in bed when Polar Bear and Blossom enter, announcing that Eric told them Jack tried to kiss him. Clip five.
Please don't waste everyone's time scrambling to deny it. It's better if you just admit the truth.
You're right.
Thank you.
Because, you know, I was just nancying around my room in my thigh highs, and I thought to myself, I'm going to lay a wet one on an unsuspecting fraternity brother because that's probably a great way to smooth things over with the house.
Jack.
If you guys imagine just for a second that I could ever in a million years do anything like that to any one of you guys, then I guess you guys never knew me at all.
Okay. I don't know about in a million years, because it feels like there's probably a lot of gay porn that starts with what we just saw with Jack and Eric.
Yeah, because then he's like, I'll just leave. And they go, that's not what we want. And I immediately was like, what do you want?
What do you want? Exactly.
Do you want him to stay and do some things?
Yes. So Blossom asks if Jack expects them to believe Eric fabricated the whole thing. But Jack doesn't care because they've already made up their mind. So, yes, he's moving out tonight. And Polar Bear, you know, tries to stop him. But Jack tells him with all due respect to get out. And they do. And then Jack is looking mournful as he walks out of the frat house with his one small bag.
Yes. Thank you for talking that, too.
All of his stuff in it. It's like it's a baby
so
knapsack. Yeah, no. Yeah, he moved in with boxes, but now he's pared it down. He Marie Kondo'd his frat room at some point. He can somehow sense Eric behind him and says, without turning around, that Eric knows what really happened and is going to have to live with it. Eric needs some serious help, and Jack hopes he gets it, which, like, I don't know how serious it is. It seemed pretty straightforward to me.
Yeah.
You probably need to talk to someone who's not in the frat, but other than that, you know.
Yeah, call Toby. He's good at this.
Mm-hmm. Call Tom Frost. It's not that long a drive.
Yeah.
So Jen has just been released from her responsibilities on Dawson and Oliver's film shoot, which we will get to, when she runs into Jack moping on a random bench somewhere near the exterior they always show of civilization, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think it's also, I think they use that bench for like anything Boston Back Bay College mm-hmm. related.
Yeah, true. He asks if she's alone. She says no, she has the Vienna Boys Choir with her, making him ask if they can turn off the sarcasm for a second. A theme that runs annoyingly through this episode, but Jen sits next to him, and when he pulls out a cigarette and lights it, she takes it out of his mouth and tosses it, asking what has happened to him. He remembers having coffee with Jen at the beginning of the school year and getting invited to a frat party. Everything after that is a blur. And he very gravely asks if Jen likes Notting Hill, and she says she loves it, which, like, the Jen who thinks no one rocks anymore and hates Britney Spears loves Notting Hill. I don't know about that. But I did appreciate like that it is a kind of moment in a friendship when suddenly you realize like, oh my God, my friend doesn't just smoke. They bought cigarettes. Like they are seriously really a smoker, not just smoking at parties.
She does look before she, after she takes it away, before she throws it away, it really looks like she's going to take a drag.
It does.
felt like Michelle Williams creeping through for a second.
Yes. I always thought that when 90210 when it would be like a huge scandal when someone smoked. It's like, you cannot tell me they don't all smoke like chimneys, especially Shannon Doherty. Good Lord. Anyway, that's what's up with Jack. Good luck to him. On to the A-plot. Most of the drama around Joey and Audrey's dorm room is not in Oliver's script. We open on Oliver and Audrey in her dorm room, exchanging banter. Clip 6.
I know who you are.
You only just met me.
I know you're a snake and a con artist. I know you've slept your way through the entire female student body and half the faculty. The kind of boy who'll break your heart and then start in on your sister.
You must be confused. Understandable. It's a common affliction among blondes. Truth is, I'm none of those things.
Oh, yeah? And who are you?
I'm just the boy that's gonna tear your soul apart.
This is ridiculous. I can't do this.
Cut, I guess.
So, yes, that banter that seems to have been lifted straight out of A Cruel Intentions or Bret Easton Ellis adaptation that the stars of this TV show have already done is, in fact, from Oliver's script, which he and Audrey are shooting. Audrey tells Dawson that having been in her character's position before, she would never tell the guy she was into him because he would lose interest immediately. When she adds that it's just bad writing, Oliver gets miffed. Dawson's attempt at direction makes one wonder why Oliver was so desperate to attach him to this project. Clip 7.
You gotta penetrate the subtext, okay? Remember, she knows that he knows that she knows what kind of man he is, right? So if he knows that she knows and she knows that he knows, see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
All right, great.
Sure. That was real helpful. So Dawson then tells his boom operator, Pacey, not to dip his microphone into the shot. And I know why Pacey has to be on set, but like Pacey has a job. He can't just dick around doing this all the time.
Yeah. They're in film school.
Yeah.
Why are any of these other people working on this? It makes no sense at all.
I assume because they hate Oliver and don't want to help. But other than that, like, Dawson can try and find some people and just not mention Oliver when he recruits them.
Yeah.
Over to Jen, who is apparently serving as Dawson's script supervisor and whom we're joining in the middle of her brains just dribbling out of her ears as we watch her. First, calling everyone back to one using a megaphone in this closed bedroom. And then being absolutely giddy to use the clapper to cue the retake of the scene. Like, please bring back the Jen who's not annoying and quit making her flat iron her hair while you're at it, because I hate this. And then we're in English class with Joey and not Elliot, who I guess was so mortified when Joey dumped him that he transferred to another school. Wilder is insufferably lecturing from behind the class so that he can dramatically walk through them as he spews a bunch of bullshit about how there's no distinction between writing a story and living a life, which if he really thinks that explains why his one novel is still only in print because he teaches it. He claims that the same things animate stories in life, like conflict between your desires and your ideals. And he asks for an example from the students' own lives of a conflict like that, which is in no way germane to the study of literature. But whatever, Joey decides to play with fire anyway. Clip 8.
I have an example.
Out with it, then.
Well, it's about a guy.
Of course, isn't it always?
You guys are being so obvious. Like, this is really bad.
And like, does she have all her classes with him? Like, it doesn't matter, but I don't understand what class he's ever teaching.
Yeah.
Because it's creative writing.
Right. He says that, but then it's like, why are you reading so much then? Like, reading other texts.
In my high school creative writing class, we read a bunch of things as like examples. Like, here's a here's a play, here's a book of essays, here, right. But even so, like, none of this feels in any way real, which why would it? Why do I care? But here we are.
Seriously. Thank you for joining me here.
Thank you for having me in a question mark.
Story continuity. So then Joey's saved by the churchy bell and Wilder tells her he was curious about where she was going. She'll have to share it with everyone next week. No, she won't. Like, talk about whatever text you're supposed to be teaching. you fucking hack.
Yeah. Or have them write stories.
Or that.
Read those. Pretend they're fiction. It's fine.
Well, where we're about to get with the two of them is also makes it just so much more preposterous what is happening in any of his classes, but we'll get there. So then as everyone's leaving, he goes, same bat time, same bat channel, which I doubt is a reference any of these 2002 college students knows.
I mean, we're not that much older than them. I guess. It's dorky and stupid, but I feel like they would get it.
Perhaps. So outside, Joey stops Wilder to say they need to talk because that was uncomfortable. No, says Wilder, that was creative writing. Uncomfortable is taught down the hall. Hi, Hungry, I'm Dad. Anyway, it's Joey pouts that there should be a word for people who use sarcasm as a defense mechanism. And he says there is, sarcastic. When he asks if she's okay, she says she's a little weirded out by recent events. And we get this, clip 9.
I'm sorry, Joey. I'm a creep. I've robbed you of your innocence, haven't I?
Oh, you're not a creep.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah,
you are. This is textbook grooming. This is part of it, making you say he's not a creep. She adds, clip 10.
And don't say you're sorry. It makes me feel...
cheap?
No.
Dirty?
No.
Yes! It makes me feel dirty.
Stop helping him.
Oh, God, I know. He finally shuts up because he claims he can tell she has a lot to say, but once she has the floor, she chokes, which the score apparently thinks is hilarious, and asks to tell him later. This is not what I want to see Ken Marino doing, ever, really. Then we're at the restaurant. Audrey finds Pacey making an omelet before open and guesses correctly that he slept there last night, probably in violation of health codes. She asks him for the omelet and is refused. He was supposed to help her, she reminds him. He jokes that he owes her a breast exam, but he was going to help her learn lines for the movie. Pacey doesn't remember, adding that it's not a good time for him, just as a cute, curly-haired lady comes from somewhere and strolls right into the kitchen in last night's club clothes, and that is certainly a violation of a health code. When she drapes herself over Pacey, he introduces Audrey to Gina, who is incensed because her name is Rena, and she storms out telling Stacy to have a nice life, which Audrey gives an approving nod, which was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was cute.
And then Audrey can have that omelet after all because Gina Rena doesn't want it. And then we're in the attic with Dawson editing footage when Jen brings him a coffee and subjects herself to his complaining about the movie. He's lost his grasp on how to make it. The ending doesn't work, but they only have 12 hours to rewrite it because that's how long they'll have the lights they rented to shoot it. But the real problem is Oliver is a terrible actor, which Dawson proves by playing Jen a clip of Oliver darting in to kiss Audrey and smashing her in the face instead. He says Jack and Grams have more sexual chemistry, which is rough, but maybe true.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
And that's when Oliver himself comes up weirdly wrapped in a red chenille blanket. Like, did he grab it on his way up? I don't get it. Dawson sits him down and very diplomatically says they need to think about what's best for the film, including that Oliver might not be right to play the lead. Oliver disagrees, but if his script has a shot of working, it will be because they followed Dawson's directorial vision. And that just presents them with another problem. Clip 11.
We have to recast the part today if we're going to shoot the finale tonight. Where are we going to find an actor who fits the bill? You know, somebody who's sexy, charismatic, and attractive.
And not burdened with a soul.
Exactly. Where are we going to find a guy like that in 6 hours?
I used to date him.
That's not a bad idea.
Hmm. Oh, yes, it is. It's a terrible idea.
What is this accent?
Well, I guess. Thank you. Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm putting down roots. Yes, it is.
Like before, in the last episode, when she was like, and tenderness, I was like, okay, she's doing a thing. I don't know what thing she's doing here.
It's deeply weird. Also, don't they have to also reshoot everything they've already shot? When, how, what?
Right. Jen hopefully says that Dawson would never make her do it, and smash cut to Jen knocking on Charlie's door. She peers around him to see if any girls are in there while he smugly says he knew she couldn't live without him. She had actually planned to live the rest of her life without him, she says, but she needs a favor, which she thinks he will do because he'll get to make out with a really hot girl, and Charlie's in! When Joey returns to her room after class, she and Audrey immediately start ranting past each other. Clip 12.
The guy is unbelievable. Oh no, he couldn't even remember her first name, not her last name. Her last name I might understand. I've slept with some guys whose last names have escaped me the morning after, but her first name?
Who?
What? Wait, who are you talking about?
Wilder.
Right, Wilder. Unbelievable.
So I'm standing there, completely ready to say everything I never said, and then he pulls his Jedi mind trick, and suddenly I can't even remember who I am.
You're Joey Potter.
And I refuse to become another one of his groupies, you know, completely infatuated with the guy and reduced to a babbling idiot at the mere mention of his name.
May I, be brutally honest?
Like you've ever been anything but?
You are completely infatuated with him, and you have been reduced to a babbling idiot at the mere mention of his name. But I'm not so sure that's a bad thing.
Well, yeah, you had me and you lost me.
Yeah. I still love them together, though.
I know. So Joey says she used to have a mentor who respected her. Debatable. They were good friends. They weren't. And whenever Audrey would suggest that anything untoward might happen between them, Joey would dismiss her. And she starts dithering over whether she should drop Wilder's class or spend the rest of the year angsting over a guy she can't be with a different one. And Audrey asks when Joey last felt this alive, and Joey laughs, and then clip 13.
Who are you talking about?
You're very cute. Over to Graham's house, where Charlie is doing his audition opposite Jen, who is reading just the beginnings and ends of the female lead's speeches in the flattest tone possible. When Charlie leans in for a kiss, Jen warns him that he's risking a world of pain. Charlie complaining to Dawson that she's giving him nothing to work with. Dawson finally releases Jen and asks Charlie to excuse him and Oliver to confer. Clip 14.
So, is this going to be awkward for you? Your girlfriend's ex starring in our flick?
I'm running out of options here.
I gotta say, he's pretty decent. I mean, if you're going for the brutally handsome, rippling abs Tony Scott version of me, he's about as good as we're going to get, right?
Right. Okay, so we use him.
Yes.
Problem solved. Mm-hmm. Okay, now all I have to do is overhaul your ending. We might get this done.
Heavens to Betsy. First you take away my starring role and now you want to rewrite my ending?
It doesn't make sense.
Actually, it's friggin' brilliant. First she breaks up with him, breaks his heart, then he blows her away with the 22. Poetic justice.
Okay. This is the character you wanted to play? Interesting.
Yikes.
Should he be on some kind of watch list? I don't know, maybe. Dawson used to think the ending was perfect, but now, having seen the footage, he has changed his mind. Charlie wanders back in to ask if he got the part. He did, if he can learn his lines in 2 hours, and Charlie is once again in. And then it's evening. Wilder's in his office staring at the screen of his Gateway laptop. That took me back. Even just a little tiny logo with the cow print on it. It's like, well, that's
very prominent, though.
A moment. So then he's distracted by the sight of Joey out front, pacing back and forth, rehearsing what she's going to say to him. And when he comes to the door, he continues to confirm what a full creep he actually is. Clip 15.
Hey, you selling Girl Scout cookies? Do you have any of the coconut ones with the chocolate and the caramel? I love those.
Ugh, gross. Like, if you think of her as a partner, stop trying to dress her up as a tiny little girl. But she very proudly says she's figured out what she wants to say, and he cracks that he'll alert the media. She asks him to drop his glib routine for 5 minutes, and when he agrees, clip 16.
I want to say, I'm sorry you kissed me.
Oh my God, Joey, I can't even begin to apologize about that.
I'm not here for an apology. I didn't want one that night, and I don't want one now. Well, in a minute, I'm going to walk over there to where you are, and I'm going to shake your hand in a very masculine way. We're going to have this little silent understanding, and then I'm just going to turn around and walk away.
What about my class?
I don't think I can be a part of it, not now.
Well, no great loss there.
You know what? Screw you.
Clever, Joey.
Both of you stop there. Get away from each other, please. Like, that's where you belong, but...
Yeah, she was so close to being right.
He was, but what Wilder meant is she doesn't need his class. Clip 17.
Joey, you've got it. the gift, the touch, whatever you want to call it. I don't, you do. It's a binary distinction. So all the washed-up hacks-turned English professors can wax poetic until the cows come home. In the end, your talents and your instincts are the only things that really matter.
You know, you're really annoying. Because every time I'm ready to do this smart, sensible thing, you go and you say something that makes me...
Makes you what?
Not want to go away.
It's the awkwardest way to say that, by the way. Like, you're not really supporting the claim that she's got it as a creative writer. Not to mention, we haven't heard any of her writing either.
Well, I don't want to. Do you want to?
No, but I would like to them to try to like do more than, you know, claim it. Give us, we haven't seen her like write something for the paper. We haven't seen her read something at like some kind of academic gathering. Like we haven't seen any evidence of what is being claimed.
Yeah. He is really annoying, but that's not why.
No.
She's so close to being there.
Yes. And also, this is like, just as Jen is getting stupider, this is when Joey is being like elevated higher and higher on her like pedestal of perfection. Like everyone has to say, she's so great. She's so kind. She's so beautiful. And now also she's so brilliant. Like,
yeah,
enough. But they do shake hands and manage not to fuck on the front walk. In the dorm room, Pacey is lying on Audrey's bed with the script while she stands by the windows, telling him this time she's not going to read the lines, she's really going to act them so he can give her notes. They go back and forth with the scene we've heard bits of already. Gage, the male lead, is not so tough, and he's falling in love with Audrey's character. Clip 18.
How do you know I'm not just going to use you up and throw you away? It's what I've always done.
You can sleep with all the right girls and take all the right drugs. In the end, you'll still be alone. It doesn't matter what anybody says, Gage. Nobody wants to be alone, not even you.
So Audrey has climbed onto Pacey and straddled him, and as soon as that clip ends, they start furiously making out, but she breaks the clinch and gets up, and he very noticeably grabs a throw pillow to put over his crotch.
Uh-huh.
Clip 19.
I'm not going to do this!
Well, no, of course not. Me neither.
Because it would be wrong.
Well, it's obviously wrong. That's why we stopped.
So, do you have any notes?
I'm just saying, fine. Eric could have straddled Jack, and that could have been a very different scene.
Yep.
And it would have been like a nice parallel with this scene. It would have mirrored. It would have been lovely.
Sure would. Oh, well.
I'm delighted by this, by the way.
It's very cute. So we come back from commercial onto a monitor showing Audrey sitting in Charlie's lap making out and the mic dipping into the shot. Before long, she yells for a cut because Charlie Sheen over here keeps sticking his tongue down her throat. Dawson asks them to take it again, reminding Pacey that if he gets the mic in the shot again, Dawson's going to forget about their friendship. Oh, no, not that. The actors start again, but Charlie forgets his line and then whines about whether it's in character for Gage. Dawson barking at him to just say it. And they get a good take, but after Dawson calls cut, Audrey yelps that she can't work like this. It's too intense with Pacey standing right next to her. He's a terrible boom operator, which again, they make it funny because the two of them are good. And then we're with Joey and Wilder sitting in his living room behind his dumb chalkboard coffee table, joking back and forth about how awkward this isn't. And this is when I noticed Wilder has the same couch as Dawson's therapist, which listeners will remember, Dave and I also had. Wilder can't lose this job. That's the last thing Joey wants. He also needs her to know he's never done anything like that before, which I doubt. But Joey just smiles and says she knows because this confirms she's special. Wilder doesn't think he's ever met anyone like her, which is hilarious. She could not be more regular.
You teach undergraduate English. You
yes.
meet dozens of girls like this
yes.
every semester. Yeah, insane.
Mm-hmm. She asks if he wants to hear her example of a conflict between her ideals and desires from before. And he asks if she's sure she doesn't want to save it for class, but she thinks she wants to run it by him first. And they are very, very, very slowly leaning toward each other when there's a buzz. Clip 20.
You're vibrating.
No.
Mm-mm. No.
No. Absolutely not.
Please stop.
It's her phone. And since this was back when the only time you would call someone's cell phone was in an emergency, she takes it. And from her side of the conversation, we surmise that she's needed on set. So she excuses herself and goes all the way outside, then runs back in, kisses Wilder, and runs out again, which the score thinks is just fine, by the way. Clip 21. And the best proof of Ken Marino's acting talent is that when he looks at her in amazement, I almost believe he has never kissed before. Like, but buddy, if this exit doesn't tell you you are dealing with kid stuff, nothing will. She is still very, very young relative to you. And on set, Pacey takes a million words to tell Dawson he thinks Audrey is in such a crazy mood because they kissed. Dawson, clip 22.
Didn't anybody ever tell you the first rule of the universe?
That energy is conserved.
First rule of the universe is never get involved with an actress.
I assume that's actress non-gender specific. Sure. Male actresses are a handful as well.
What? No, not James Vanderbeek, I'm sure. He was perfect at all times.
Not Chad Michael Murray either, honestly.
Yeah.
Then Oliver shows up, gasping that it's trying to think just ahead of Charlie, wanting to share some notes on his character. Jen has to be physically restrained from attacking Charlie, which is when Joey walks in, trying to ignore the sex eyes. Charlie immediately shoots at her. Dawson asks Joey and Pacey to go talk Audrey down, sends Oliver to nod vaguely as Charlie gives Oliver his script notes, and finally asks Jen, unconvincingly calling her sweetheart for the second time this episode, to go home, because otherwise he's not going to get anything done. Clip 23.
But who would do the clappy thing?
We'll manage.
Jen, be smart again, please.
She looks so sad, and like the face Michelle Williams makes is really adorable.
Mm-hmm.
I still hate it.
Yep.
But she is selling it in a way that I appreciate.
Yes. On their way to the bathroom where Audrey is holed up, Joey figures this out that Dawson sent Pacey with her because something happened between him and Audrey. And when he tries to deny it, she calls him an idiot. Of course, Joey would rather he hooked up with someone amazing like Audrey instead of a rando whose name he can't remember the morning after. Joey then has to drag Pacey by the ear into the ladies' room where Busy Phillips does a lot of sniffling and Kleenex wiping, but no one has ever looked less like they've been crying than she does. Like, her face is completely dry. When Joey says she knows they kissed, Audrey panics that she's ruined her friendship with Joey, the most special thing that's happened to her since she came to Worthington, just because she has no self-control around guys. But Joey thinks Audrey and Pacey seeing each other might be the smartest thing either of them has done in a long time and assures each of them that she loves them and wants them to be happy. They don't need her permission, but they have her blessing for whatever that's worth, which is nice. Good for her.
Yeah. I obviously like this version of Joey better than the mopey, bitchy one. But
yes.
Are we meant to believe that she is all zen now because she kissed Wilder? Like, yes. I guess it's like a confidence boost that somebody other than Joey or Dawson is into her, but she had that with Elliot. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. She, from this point forward, is like acting very wise and above it all with her friends. And that's not as annoying as whatever Jen is doing, but it's bad.
Yeah. And just out of nowhere, which sort of means it has to be related to Wilder. And I hate that.
Yeah. So outside by a fountain, a large crew for this student film is setting up for the big final scene when Joey joins Dawson in whatever you call video village when there's just one monitor. Joey says that if there aren't any more crises for her to handle, she's going to go. Dawson says she can unless she can rewrite the ending, which he is unsure about. Knowing it's a love story, she asks if it's a happy ending or this being 2002, not so much. And he says the latter, given the murder. Joey says it's a little cynical for the Dawson she knows. He mumbles that he's in his dark period, but she says if that's true, he shouldn't have any trouble filming it. Part of Dawson wishes he could still be the embarrassing romantic kid he used to be, but he can't muster sentimentality or corn or hope. Joey, who, as we said, has spent every second of her screen time since she left Wilder's place acting insufferably wise compared to the little kids she's friends with, says this, clip 24.
I was at the bus station one time, and someone had written these words on a bench. Hope dies last. I always loved it. I think you're waiting for a sign.
Been waiting. I'm freezing my ass off out here.
Did it ever occur to you, Dawson Leary, that maybe I'm the sign you're waiting for? going to be okay. For all of us.
Remember, like, 4 episodes ago when Dawson told Joey it hurt to be around her? Because now it's hurting me. It's too much. Dawson, then, is watching Audrey's back on a bench when he suddenly gets an idea and runs toward her. Oliver is in his way saying Dawson's right, the ending sucks, but Dawson goes past him and shows Audrey the last page of the script. And he crosses out some stuff saying he's not going to do it and circling other bits in a way that would only work if the script is printed in like a 2-point font. Like everything he's touching is all the same
it's
part
all
of the
same
page.
Place. Yeah.
But he says it's not dry or sardonic. It's honest and vulnerable. He whispers an instruction to her that she's not sure about it, but he says, shoot first, ask questions later. And then he yells to everyone that they're going to do it in one shot. Think Orson Welles' Touch of Evil. Ugh, shut up. And then returns to his seat next to Pacey, giggling with glee. Oliver does the clappy thing. And then Charlie's character shows up with a handgun tucked in the back of his pants. And clip 25.
You ruined my life. You wrecked me.
I know. And I'm sorry. I did a bad thing. I've done a lot of bad things in my life. I didn't have a choice. I had to do it because it was all part of the trip, the journey. To this place, in this moment, with you. Thing about life, you can't lose, and you can't win. You've got to try. Don't speak.
But
don't speak.
You know the theme to the Luther show?
Mm-hmm.
It's a song called Paradise Circus by Massive Attack. That was so off-brand that a little too expensive for our taste. Let's get the music department on something that's 70% exactly the same.
Well, they spent all their money on the location of the James A. Polk Memorial that they are at.
Great.
Famous Massachusettsian president. No, he is from North Carolina.
Yep. So what happens when Audrey starts giggling is that it spontaneously starts to snow and they get the scene. Dawson is pleased. And sometime later, Pacey's walking Audrey home, apologizing for what happened in her room before, because his mind just took a trip to the Bahamas. And Audrey says she was just immersed in the method, having watched a lot of James Lipton lately. And they both agree that Joey, having given them her blessing, whatever feelings they had have passed. Audrey says Pacey's not her type, repeating it as they kiss, because she's trying to convince herself. And after some more kissing, Pacey says she was amazing earlier and asks how she does that thing where she smiles and the whole world lights up. And she suggests it's acting. And he says it beats the hell out of work. Har har. Then they kiss more. And then we're back with Joey, alone and smiling to herself. When she sees a sign for the tea, she kneels down, sort of fakes like she's making a snowball, but clearly just picks up the one that was left for her on her mark, as you can see in the visual aids. Narrates a little baseball play-by-play and then pitches the snowball straight at the sign, and the crowd goes wild. She makes such a dopey face when she's celebrating herself that you can also see in the visual aids.
And the sign is so big,
mm-hmm.
like so bizarrely big, and like, of course you hit it. You're like a foot away, and it's the size of you.
It's not a strike zone. It's 4 strike zones. We fade to black, and then see this is to be continued. Oh, no. Something so bad is coming.
It's so weird. Like, we're in the future, so we know what the next episode is. But,
mm-hmm.
like, it's always to be continued. It's a soap opera, and nothing has happened. Like, mm-mm. she just threw a snowball at a sign. Like, it's the weirdest way to end any episode of the show ever.
Yeah, it would be different if they had a shot of like her wandering away and then someone comes into view.
Yeah.
We see someone's watching her. Like, that's how you do it to be continued.
Literally anything. Yeah, so strange.
Anyway, that's the episode. Let's close it up by naming our MVP. Oh, God. It's really a lot of bad choices.
The throw pillow that Pacey grabs. Rena.
Sure.
Having self-respect.
Had some self-respect. I'll say Jack because he did make the reasonable, safe choice, even if it wasn't the horny one that we might have preferred to see. Least valuable player. Wilder. Groomer.
Yeah.
Groomer alert.
Yeah, I was going to say Eric. Like, I want to respect his coming out journey, but he doesn't need to throw Jack under the bus in the process.
No.
But no, I mean, it has to be Wilder.
It sadly does. And he's in so many more episodes after this, too. Like, I can't imagine how they unravel him from all this. But I guess we'll find out. But not next week. Because next time, we will arrive at Downtown Crossing. And if you know, you know. And we're sorry, but, you know, this is what you wanted. We thought.
Who wrote this?
Adam, thank you for your service. Please tell the listeners where they can find you.
You can listen to my podcast, Muppeturgy, wherever you get podcasts. And you can find me on various social medias at Adam807.
Please, listener, for your own sake, go to againwiththispodcast.com for links to our gorgeous visual aids, our even more gorgeous merch, to buy a very special 90210 book by Sarah and me, and information on how to get in the Again With This Club, including all of the perks you will get and the milestones of our membership campaign. Just about $250, we'll be printing those stickers, so get in there if you have not already. I'm Tara Ariano, and I'm on my way to watch those horrific bungee accidents. Our guest co-host is Adam Grossworth, and he's selling those nice cookies you like. And our producer, David T. Cole, has got the gift. On behalf of all of us and the absent Sarah D. Bunting, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Do you have any notes?
Nice.